Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So, what really happens when a highly effective, targeted cancer drug inadvertently acts like a biological sieve?
Like selecting for a far deadlier version of the disease, you mean?
Exactly. Imagine reading a garden by removing all the dominant plants, only to realize you've just created the perfect sunlit real estate for a much more aggressive, deeply rooted weed to take over. How could this change the way we treat blood cancers?
Well, today we celebrate the work of a massive collaborative team, and this includes Nabi Masla, Nina Kachi, Blandine Rue, Lena Benajiba, and researchers from Université Paris-Cité, INSERM, and Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Wow, there's a huge group.
It really is, and they've significantly advanced our understanding of myeloproliferative neoplasms. This deep dive is actually based on their open access article titled JAK2 Inhibition Mediates Clonal Selection of RAS Pathway Mutations in Myeloproliferative Neoplasms.
Which was published in Nature Communications on July 08, 2025, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, let's unpack this. For anyone working with or studying myeloproliferative neoplasms or MPNs, the underlying biology is pretty familiar. We are looking at a state of constitutive activation within the JAK-STAT signaling pathway.
Right, which is usually driven by those classic driver mutations, you know, in JAK2, CLR, MPL.
Yeah, and the standard of care shifted dramatically, like, about a decade ago with the introduction of targeted JAK inhibitors, right?
Right.
With ruxolitinib being the massive first-in-class breakthrough.
It was huge. The clinical utility of ruxolitinib has been undeniably robust. I mean, it successfully dampens that overactive JAK pathway.
Which directly translates to shrinking those massive spleens, right?
Exactly. Massive spleen size reductions. And it significantly alleviates the severe symptoms that just, well, degrade a patient's quality of life. From a pharmacological standpoint, the drug does exactly what it was engineered to do.
But there's a catch.
Yeah, there is. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the complication arises when we map that success onto the biological reality of intra-patient tumor heterogeneity.
Right, because cancer isn't just one monolithic thing. You're dealing with this dynamic ecosystem where genetically diverse subclones are basically competing for resources in the bone marrow.
Spot on. So the clinical question becomes, does the selective pressure of a drug like ruxolitinib suppress the dominant clone only to, you know, clear the runway for a more aggressive subclone to expand?
That's such a tough position for doctors. Mm-hmm. I mean, put yourself in the shoes of a clinician. You have a therapy that gives immediate, tangible relief to your patient right now.
But you have to weigh that against how the disease might evolve over a span of years.
Exactly. So how do the researchers actually test this?
Well, they knew that to definitively answer if ruxolitinib drives this aggressive clonal selection, they needed long-term real-world data. So they established a cohort of 143 patients diagnosed with myelofibrosis.
Which is a really rigorous sample size for this specific condition, honestly.
It is, and they used a natural comparison point. They tracked 72 patients actively treated with ruxolitinib against a control group of 71 patients who didn't receive the drug.
To monitor the evolutionary shifts over time, they deployed a longitudinal next-generation sequencing panel, right? Covering, I think, 36 specific myeloid genes.
Yeah, 36 genes. And when you look at bulk sequencing over time, you can clearly see the allele frequencies of certain mutations going up or down between the baseline and follow-ups years later.
But wait, let me push back here for a second. How do they know these mutations weren't just a natural progression of the disease? I mean, myelofibrosis naturally has genomic instability. If a patient is on the drug and a mutation expands, bulk data alone doesn't prove the drug caused it.
Right. That is the exact hurdle they had to overcome. To isolate causation from correlation, they had to move way beyond just bulk sequencing.
So what do they do?
They utilize single-cell DNA sequencing on primary CD34-positive human cells. These were collected directly from the patients and treated ex vivo.
Oh, wow. So at single-cell resolution, you're not just looking at a soup of mutations.
Yeah.
You can literally reconstruct the phylogenetic tree of the cancer.
Exactly. You can see if a rising RAS mutation exists totally on its own, or if it explicitly co-occurred inside the exact same blast cell as the original JAK2 mutation.
So by tracking that exact cellular lineage, they can see if a specific subclone the one with both mutations, suddenly gets a survival advantage the moment you expose it to the JK inhibitor.
Right, and they saw that advantage directly, but they didn't stop there. To prove it happens in a living system, they constructed highly controlled in vivo competitive bone marrow transplants.
In mice, right.
Yes, they irradiated the mice to clear out their existing bone marrow, creating a blank slate. Then they engrafted them with a calibrated mix of stem cells.
Okay, so what was the mix?
One population had a mutated JAK2 gene, but a wild-type RAS gene. The competing population had a wild-type JAK2, but a mutated RAS gene.
Ah, I see. So by putting these two profiles into direct competition in the same mouse, you're basically recreating the heterogeneous bone marrow of a human patient.
Exactly. Then you introduce the ruxolitinib therapy and just watch the engraftment ratios over several weeks to see who wins the space.
And who won?
The selective pressure from the drug systematically favored the RAS mutated cells. The in vivo mouse models perfectly mirrored the single cell data. It proved the drug itself was the catalyst for the expansion.
Not just a bystander. Wow. Okay, well, here's where it gets really interesting. When you look at how this biological mechanism translates back to the bulk clinical data of those 143 human patients, the statistical signal is just massive.
It's staggering, honestly.
Right. In the cohort treated with ruxolitinib, the accumulation of new mutations in the RAS signaling pathway, specifically in genes like NRAS, KRAS, and CBL, happened at a drastically accelerated rate. We're talking about a hazard ratio of 9.8 compared to untreated patients.
And a hazard ratio of almost 10 indicates a fiercely powerful selective advantage. But the really grim part is how this redirects the disease trajectory.
Yeah, the transformation rates.
Right. In the treated patients who developed these RAS mutations, 47% underwent leukemic transformation. They progressed into secondary acute myeloid leukemia or myelodysplastic syndromes.
47%. That is nearly half. That fundamentally changes the risk-benefit calculus for managing long-term care.
Yeah.
Especially when you compare to the untreated patients with RAS mutations.
Yeah, in that untreated group, only 16.7% experienced that severe leukemic transformation.
And the overall survival data is equally stark, isn't it?
Very. For treated patients without RAS mutations, the median overall survival was 18.5 years. But if a RAS mutation emerged under treatment...
Let me guess, it dropped.
It plummeted. The median survival dropped to just 7.6 years.
Wow. Okay, so the clinical data establishes a clear causal link between the therapy and a severe reduction in lifespan due to this clonal evolution. But this presents a huge paradox. Well, how does a therapy engineered to arrest cellular proliferation end up creating an environment where a specific, highly mutated cell population just multiplies aggressively? I mean, if a cell has a mutation driving growth, inhibiting that pathway should stop it.
It should theoretically neutralize it, yes. The fact that it does the exact opposite points to a really fascinating secondary mechanism. It's basically a biological Goldilocks principle.
Okay, I love a good analogy. Break that down for me.
So it hinges on the relationship between the JAK-STAT pathway and the MPK pathway. Now, RAS mutations constitutively activate the MPK pathway.
Right, they keep it switched on.
Exactly. And in these MPN patients, the primary driver mutation is already keeping the JAK pathway permanently on, too. So yeah. If a single cell acquires a secondary RAS mutation, it's suddenly getting maximum growth signals from both pathways at the same time.
And that combined signal is just too much, right? The mitogenic input would overload the cell's regulatory framework.
It totally overloads it. The cell gets an overwhelming mandate to replicate, which causes severe DNA replication stress. So the cell initiates a failsafe.
Oncogene-induced senescence.
Bingo. The excessive signaling activates cell cycle arrest proteins. It basically forces the cell into a permanent biological dormancy.
So it doesn't die, it can't divide.
Right. The cell's engine is running so hot that it shuts itself down to prevent damage. The RAS mutation actually neutralizes its own ability to expand because the signal is too high.
So this super aggressive RAS clone is just sitting there, trapped as a tiny dormant fraction of the tumor burden until the patient starts ruxolitinib.
Exactly. The drug successfully inhibits the JK pathway, so the overall volume of growth signaling inside that dormant cell drops.
It drops out of the overload zone and lands in the Goldilocks zone.
Yes. The signal isn't intense enough anymore to maintain the oncogene-induced senescence. The biological bricks come off.
And because it still has the RAS mutation driving the MAPK pathway, it wakes up and resumes dividing.
And now it has a massive competitive advantage because the dominant JK-driven cells all all around it are being suppressed by the drug.
Oh my God. The targeted therapy acts as the exact physiological switch that releases the subclone from its own arrest. You're clearing out the cellular canopy and giving the dangerous weed the sunlight to take over.
It's a perfect illustration of the feedback loops in cancer networks. Targeted therapies aren't just isolated interventions. They apply pressure across the whole ecosystem.
So what does this all mean? Clinically speaking, I mean, if the very mechanism that makes the inhibitor work is what wakes up the RAS clones, that completely changes how we should prescribe it.
This raises an important question, right? It absolutely demands advanced molecular screening before initiating targeted therapy. Right now, a diagnosis and a JAK2 mutation is usually enough to prescribe ruxolitinib or fedratinib or momelotinib.
But this research says doctors need to use sensitive sequencing to hunt for those dormant RAS mutations first.
Before writing the prescription, yeah. If they find a dormant RAS clone, even at a tiny fraction, they know the drug will likely wake it up.
But you can't just withhold a great drug from a sick patient either. So what's the move?
Well, the researchers anticipated that dilemma. Because they understood the escape route, the MAPK pathway, they mapped out a combinatorial approach.
Adding another drug to the mix.
Right. In their lab models, they added a MEK12 inhibitor, specifically trametinib. MEK is a downstream effector in that RASMAPK cascade.
So dual suppression. You hit JAK to alleviate the main disease burden, which accidentally tries to wake up the RAS clones.
But the MEK inhibitor is already there, blocking the MPK pathway those clones need to grow. In the models, this totally prevented the mutant clones from expanding.
It's like putting out a fire by removing the fuel, but also cutting off the oxygen so no secondary fires can start. This is a huge rationale for new clinical trials.
It is. But we also have to remember the limitations here. We shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Ruxolitinib remains highly beneficial for many patients.
Right. What were the numbers again?
Only about 24% of the treated patients harbored these emergent RAS clones, compared to 8% in the untreated group.
Okay, so for like 3/4 of the patients, the drug works exactly as intended without waking up this specific threat. We just need to be far more precise with molecular screening.
Exactly. We have to manage the longitudinal evolution of the genetic landscape, not just treat the immediate symptoms.
Wow. Okay, so to wrap this up, targeted therapies like ruxolitinib apply selective pressure that can inadvertently awake dormant, aggressive RAS mutated clones by releasing them from oncogene-induced senescence. To safely treat myeloproliferative neoplasms moving forward, clinicians really must monitor this dynamic clonal evolution and consider combinatorial treatments.
That sums it up perfectly.
So, leaving you with a thought, what does this mean for our broader reliance on single target therapies across other heterogeneous cancers, like skin or pancreatic tumors, where phenotypically silent RAS mutations might just be waiting for the right drug to wake them up?
This episode was based on an open access article under the CCBY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base. White gold nights and a bright screen glow. Be quiet, one signal, watch another go. Turn down the jake, the static fades. But in the hush of shadow upgrades, a fork in the wiring, a hidden spark. A clone in the corner learns to move in the dark. What looked like control, a gentler break, can open the door that we didn't make. When you dim that pathway, the other one runs. Map cape rising like a second sun. Wrath in the bloodstream taking the stage. Escape in the lock of a cell's old cage. So read the code before you choose the fight. And pair the brakes to hold the line.
cells, dialing frame by frame. Same driver, heart.